Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lab. We are coming to you live from the Constellation Furyk and Friends Pro-Am. Rex, this was my first experience playing in a Pro-Am. Had a couple of other opportunities, had to decline them. I did not do so because we're in my hometown of Jacksonville. It's a beautiful day. You were coming up. What is there not to like about it? How was your day alongside PGA Tour Champions player Eric Axley, 50 years old and playing his first year on the senior circuit?
It was so much more enjoyable than I remember this being. And I think I played in one a few years ago at the RSM Classic. And I remember having this conversation with someone about, I don't understand the mind frame of why people want to do this. Because I was nervous. I didn't enjoy the round. I didn't enjoy the company. And it had nothing to do with the pro. It was Charles Howell, who I'd covered for a long time. I knew him well enough. It was just, it was a very, very uncomfortable, nervy situation. Today was completely different. I don't know how you felt. I never really felt nervous. We were out there. We were playing a shamble, if I know this correctly. So it's not as though you had a whole bunch of pressure on you. I will say that being the only one in the group that was getting any strokes at all, I started feeling pressure on the back nine as some of those putts started to count. And even with that, we didn't come anywhere close to winning.
I was going to say, what did we shoot? Like 12 or 13 under, which like, it didn't feel like we were playing badly. In fact, I hit a couple of really nice shots. There's obviously some sandbaggers when you get into this sort of situation. We were playing alongside a local radio guy, Joe, who lives in St. Augustine, alongside AP golf writer Doug Ferguson, who I'm sure is familiar to a very golfy audience. I don't feel like either of those two players brought it today either. And so, you know, we were sort of middle of the pack. But we weren't there for winning this championship. I don't even know what the grand prize was. We were having a very good day. I must give a shout out, Rex, to Eric Axley, who is actually playing in this week's event, but only after making an albatross on the 17th hole at the Dyes Valley course in the Monday qualifier for a PGA Tour Champions event. Great guy. How familiar were you with Eric's backstory and his game before we played alongside him today?
Oh, I covered him quite a bit when he was on the PGA Tour, and he was such a talented player, hit it a mile. I remember him when he was in his prime, kind of bounced back and forth a little bit, like a lot of guys. I think the misnomer here, and it was fun to have some conversations with him, because this year on the PGA Tour Champions, he's only gotten 5 starts. I believe this is his 5th start, and I asked him what the others were, and one was the U.S. Senior Open, which was at Newport, which was very, very difficult conditions, and the other was at the Senior British Open, which was at Carnoustie, which was very, very difficult. And the other two were also at pretty difficult golf courses. And his point was, is you have, it's hard to quantify when you're talking to someone who plays his club 2 or 3 times a week, and you may go out and you may shoot around par, maybe even under par, and it doesn't even sniff what you would need to do at a golf course like Newport or Carnoustie. It's so difficult, even today. I don't know about you, but every time that you play in a situation where either on a Monday after a tournament, or if you're lucky enough to play in the Pro-Am, you do start getting a better appreciation of how good they actually are. Because I don't know about you, I felt like I hit some pretty decent shots today that didn't end up very good at all. And it's all about precision, that on a normal golf course, you have 5, 6, 7 yards to miss. On this golf course, you probably had 1 or 2 yards. And if you were off by 1 or 2 yards, you were probably going to roll off the green. It's a brilliant golf course. I've wanted to play this golf course for so long. That was the highlight of the day for me.
The golf course was certainly a highlight. I've never played here despite living about 35 minutes away. Old Donald Ross, classic design, basically looks unlike anything else that you'd see in Northeast Florida. Tall pine trees, sort of subtle slopes. These greens weren't even tournament speed, and they were certainly baffling us. The golf course obviously has been soft because it's been doing nothing but raining over the past month, but an absolute gem of a golf course. Hoping we get another chance to play out here. As I mentioned, Rex, this is the first time I've ever gone to a PGA Tour Champions event. I was struck by like the build out, the infrastructure. I mean, there is everything here that you would see at a PGA Tour event, from the trailers to the hospitality tents, sort of the army of volunteers that are required to put on a tournament of this sort of magnitude. That was certainly eye-opening to me. And I couldn't help but think, so Eric Axley is a one-time winner on the PGA Tour. He won the 2006 Valero Texas Open. He's sort of struggling for status now as he's just turned 50. Like, if you are of a certain vintage and if you have sort of certain credentials, this has got to be the best life ever. For 5, 10 years, however long you can string it out and still be competitive on the senior circuit. Like, this is amazing. playing great golf courses, meeting a bunch of interesting people. Everything is still tailored to you and for you, just as it was on the PGA Tour. You're playing in front of fans. You're playing like this is gravy street. You're still playing for obviously a decent amount of money as well. I was struck by sort of the grandeur of an event. If you just think that's, I mean, I've covered a bunch of Korn Ferry Tour events. This pales in comparison to what those sort of events are like and what sort of the ambience is like on the golf course as well.
And I think there's also an element, and we saw it from Eric today, and I spoke with a couple of players on the range this morning. Davis Love was out there. Jason Bone was out there. They all still love to compete. And I think you can't do this in any other sport. When you're 50-something as a baseball player, either you're a manager or you're a first base coach or you're not in the game at all. You cannot do this in any other sport. And to be able to keep that competitive fire so late, I mean, you look what Langer did. Now, granted, he's the outlier. He's ridiculous, and he's beating Father Time somehow, and he continues to do it. But even if you're right, even if you do it for 5 or 10 years after you've kind of finished up whatever your PGA Tour career added up to, it is fun. And you come to an event like this at an awesome golf course in a really, really good market. And I'm always curious because, let's face it, the Players' Championship is the jewel of this coast. You live here. You know it better than I do. And yet, you start looking at the infrastructure, and it's clear they're going to get a ton of fans out here this weekend. There's going to be a ton of interest. We're right outside the media center. It's as big as any media center. I'm going to go to the RSM Classic next month, and that's as big as the media center there. So, yeah, I mean, to your point, and as a reporter, you want to show up here because you want to talk to Furyk about last week's President's Cup and what he won. You want to talk to Davis Love about where he is in his season. So I do think there's a lot of interesting elements to it.
I certainly agree with that. And just a shout out to the Players' Championship. I think that's the best run tournament of the entire year. The amount of fan interest, the amount of attention, the number of people on the ground. Like, if I know everyone wants to go to the Waste Management Phoenix Open because it's happening and you can get drunk or do whatever else you want to do for a couple of days. And that certainly has its appeal as well. If you want to get drunk, go to a really fun golf course and see the best players in the world. Like, you come to the Players' Championship. Everyone I know goes to the Players' Championship for the entire week, has a great time, is a great tournament. It's Constellation Furyk and Friends. That will be no different event this week. It's not on the PGA Tour. It's not on the LPGA Tour. It's on the DP World Tour, the Dunhill Links. Great event, 72-hole event. And we finally have some of the biggest players from multiple tours all back together again. Rory McIlroy, Brooks Koepka, John Rahm, Tyrrell Hatton, Tommy Fleetwood. Does this not feel like old times with all the best players in the world playing great golf courses under one tour?
No, absolutely it does. And I think you brought this up when we did our Golf Today hit earlier in the week when we came back on Monday. The idea that, and again, we've had this conversation before, where if there is some sort of agreement between the PGA Tour, DP World Tour, and the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, I really want to sit down and do this exercise where I give you a blank piece of paper and you come up with the best schedule. And imagine part of that schedule being the Irish Open and the Scottish Open, which are now big parts of the schedule. They're both very, very important events. And the Dunhill would factor into that. The BMW PGA, which is their flagship event in Europe, that wouldn't be included in it. We would be at the point in the season where you would probably have two or maybe three events in Europe probably before we broke and then finished up the season, wherever it is we're going to finish up the year. But you look at what's going on this week, and I think you're absolutely right. And again, it comes with a modicum of controversy, if you want to call it that, because John Rahm is playing this week, but he's playing this week sort of quote-unquote under protest because he didn't want to pay his fines, which I don't quite understand. He seems to make drawing a hard line in the sand. But I do say that now that we're however many years into the PGA Tour LIV Golf split, and we've come to understand that the four major championships are even more important now because it's the only time when we get the top players together again. When you get these one-offs, and look, to a certain degree, we even had it last week at the Spanish Open with John Rahm, who ended up losing in a playoff. But when you get to see these players on a more regular basis, I think that just shows you what the game is missing because of the split in the game. Right now, this week at the Dunhill, you're going to see all of those top players playing again, and it's going to be a really cool event on iconic golf courses. You have the Old Course, you have Carnoustie, and I believe Kings Barn is the third one in the rotation. It's so entertaining, and at a time of year, I think it's something that people are probably going to gloss over a little bit, but you probably shouldn't.
I think that's the part that I wanted to to touch on here, Rex, because if you are mapping out what an ideal worldwide schedule would look like, to me, these sort of events would go in the summertime when there's not a whole lot else going on the sports calendar. You are already sort of leading into the Open Championship. Like, having it in the fall when attention is already divided, when all of the biggest championships have already been decided, when players already have an eye on the holidays or making improvements for 2025 or whatever the case may be, sort of stuffing this in early October just feels like a miss to me, where you're playing the most iconic golf courses with the best fields. And I understand the PGA Tour's line has always been, you know, if we don't have an event during this time, then someone else is going to stage one. And yes, the PGA Tour is playing in Mississippi with the old Sanderson Farms this week, but that's not where a true hardcore golf fan's attention is going to be. You'd love to see the PGA Tour incorporate this some way, just to me, at a time of year that is not so heavily dominated by college football and the NFL as well. I thought you could have a sort of a Euro swing, UK swing in the summer, when you're sort of leading into and out of the Open Championship, instead of just having it in October and November. It just feels like a miss to me.
I see where you're coming from, and I think we could probably draw up a pretty cool schedule in the middle of the summer as we're heading to the Open Championship. And a few years ago, we actually had that. I covered the Irish Open, the Scottish Open, going into the Open Championship. That was a really good buildup, and you ended up with really good fields, obviously, at those first two events going into the Open Championship. I don't know how much more you could really sign off, though, to be quite frank, because what you have is a really crowded golf calendar right now, and it's dominated by the PGA Tour, and whether or not, if that remains to be the case, we're not quite sure. But after the U.S. Open in June, and look, the buildup is going to be the Masters in April, however it is you get through the spring, quickly we're at the PGA Championship in May and the U.S. Open, there's not a whole lot of room, not a lot of real estate between the U.S. Open and the Open Championship where you could add a Dunhill or a Spanish or a French Open. All these are really good events, and I think Rory McIlroy has probably done a better job than most explaining why national championships are important. We certainly saw it. I certainly saw it this year with Robert McIntyre winning the Scottish Open. I think Rory being in contention at the Irish Open, these events are more meaningful because they are national championships. I'm not quite sure, though, if there is enough real estate. I'm not quite sure if there's enough bandwidth between the major championships in the middle of the summer to fit all of these events in. I'm with you on a certain level that I can see you slicing out a portion of the calendar, and we kind of did that this year between the Scottish Open, the Open, and the Olympics in Paris. But you're talking about a 5-6 week stretch in Europe, and I'm not quite sure that would work.
It certainly seems, doesn't it, Rex, like golf fans and even elite PGA Tour players, I'm talking the stars, the superstars of the PGA Tour, and even on LIV Golf, they seem to be wanting something different than what is offered now, but we don't quite know how we're going to get it, right? Like if you talk to any PGA Tour player during the BMW Championship or the Tour Championship this year, and I know the Olympics was thrown in there, and that was a sort of an unforeseen or an unscheduled type of event, but those guys were gassed, absolutely gassed by the end of the FedEx Cup playoffs. That's in large part because the PGA Tour schedule now is so condensed from January to August, as opposed to drawing it out past Labor Day. You mix in sort of the signature events that everyone's going to want to play, the major championships, it all of a sudden becomes a lot of golf in a very short period of time. And now once you get post President's Cup, all those guys by and large want to take a break. Like we're not really going to see any U.S. President's Cuppers for the remainder of the fall, save for a Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa at the Zozo Championship type of thing. That on the other side, though, those players also sort of recognize that you need to get more worldwide if you want to broaden the appeal of the PGA Tour, if you want to sort of have this world tour conceit where you're sort of expanding and spreading the PGA Tour gospel to far-flung parts of the world, that's how you can attract new sponsors. That's how you can attract new markets. That's how you can sort of reinvest in the PGA Tour, which is obviously what the SSG has done with the infusions of billions here. If you do that, you're going to have to break up what is now considered the basic PGA Tour major championship schedule. Right, like you could potentially move the PGA Championship to a further time in the year, in the fall, maybe even the winter, and spread that out that way. But conversely, you're not going to have an off season if you do that. Sort of cramming in this UK swing, this Euro swing that we're talking about, then going back to Scotland while still having it in that January to August timeframe doesn't seem like it's going to work. I understand the appeal of both of them, and I don't think we're at the point now where we even have a sort of model of what this could potentially look like.
Well, and I guess I would turn this back on you. And okay, let's do the sports radio thing where we sit down with our blank piece of paper and we come up with the best possible schedule. And I think the PGA Tour is inching closer to that. By all accounts, I'm being told that they are whiteboarding sort of this exact same scenario right now, where they're sitting down and trying to figure out the best time of year to be at Pebble Beach. And maybe that's not February. And we can all agree that's probably not going to be the best time. Maybe we need to work it in to the schedule in June. You can play the Florida Swing essentially anytime. So if we're going to be at Bay Hill or the Players Championship, you could probably inch those around. So this is the exercise that's going on right now. But to your point, let's say that there are going to be limitations to whatever this global schedule is. I don't think we're going to see another 48 event schedule. That's not being realistic anymore, or at least for this tour, which you want to have the absolute best players playing against each other at the biggest events. They're not going to do that for 48 weeks. So let's pick a day. Let's pick a number. And it's, I guess my guess is going to be somewhere between 15 and 20. And even if you lean towards 20, it's going to be heavy on the PGA Tour and American schedule. And then when you do go to Europe, I can't imagine there's going to be more than five tops. And then if there is some sort of agreement between the Public Investment Fund, you would think we're going to the Middle East for a couple of those events. We're going to Asia for a couple of those events. If we're truly going to do a global schedule, I understand what you're saying, but you're going to have to pick what the cream of the crop is in Europe. And I'm not quite sure. I love the Dunhill as much as you do, but I'm not sure that qualifies.
I certainly understand that point. I certainly understand that perspective. And look, Roy McIlroy has been doing this his entire career. He's been an international player playing, being a card-carrying member on both the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour. It would be easy for him to do 4, 5, 6 events internationally and really think nothing of it. That would be a huge sea change for a Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, a Colin Morikawa, who maybe mix in 1 or 2 international events throughout their PGA Tour schedule. This would be an entire sea change. It would be an entire philosophy change for those players. That, to me, seems like the hardest sort of ask for those type of players. Now, I think the benefits would be wide-ranging. It's convincing them that this is the best path forward that I think could be a little bit of a challenge. You mentioned, Rex, something very interesting with the PGA Tour executives and the folks on the policy board sort of whiteboarding what the future of the PGA Tour could look like. Let's put on our tinfoil hats, because right now, or at least tomorrow in Scotland, Jay Monahan and Saudi Public Investment Fund Governor Yasir Al-Rumayyan are playing in the exact same group. What are they talking about? Is this the week, do you think, that there can finally not just be substantial progress on a future deal, but how about a deal gets consummated and we can finally end 2 years of division?
Yeah, I've heard about this now for a couple of weeks. So the expectations were pretty high going into this. And also Guy Kenning from the DP World Tour, the executive director, will be there. So you essentially have all of the major players in the room at one time. And I would guess this kind of falls in line from what I've been told has been going on since the framework agreement was signed. And go back to the Players' Championship, when a bunch of the players from the policy board flew down to the Bahamas to meet with Yasir Al-Rumayyan, the governor of the Public Investment Fund. And what I've been told happens is they all sit in the same room, and it seems to me they're all moving in the right direction. And I've been told that the negotiations take a step forward. And then what they do is they sort of break for a week or two, and the lawyers get involved, and the small print becomes smaller, and they end up taking 2 steps back. So yes, I know there's going to be very, very important conversations going on this week, especially if they're playing golf together, because now you've taken the aspect of sitting across a table and trying to come up with what's best for you and maybe not necessarily what's best for the person on the other side of the table. And you're putting it into the context where you're just having conversations on the golf course. And anyone who's ever done business on the golf course will tell you that's a really good place to do it, because it's relaxed and you don't have all of those expectations. So I expect to take another step, maybe 2 steps forward. The bigger question here is there's a couple of sticking points, and it still remains to be seen how you get by those sticking points, because I don't think that it's Jay Monahan and Yasir Al-Rumayyan that are getting caught up in these sticking points. It's everyone else around them. I had a player come up to me last week at the President's Cup and ask me how many players on both sides, players that play on LIV, players that play on the PGA Tour, want there to be an agreement. And my response was, I would hope all of them on some level would want an agreement, because we can all agree right now, in my mind, that without an agreement, the game is in a really, really bad spot. What we end up with is Bryson DeChambeau winning winning the U.S. Open at Pinehurst and having all this attention on golf and him splitting off to go in a different direction and the rest of the PGA Tour going up to the Travelers Championship in Connecticut to play in an event the exact same week. That's not good for the game. It's not good for the fans. It's not good for the media partners or the corporate partners. And I don't think that's sustainable. So that was my answer. How we get there, that's when things start to unravel because you have personalities on both sides. I'm blaming one side or the other. You have PGA Tour players that want those players who went to live golf to, if they're going to be welcomed back into the fold, so to speak, to sort of, they want a pound of flesh, to be quite frank. They want there to be suspensions or fines or whatever the case may be. I can tell you from experience talking with a lot of live guys, they have no interest in paying fines or serving suspensions. And so it's a sticking point. And I think Yasser and Jay can probably come up with some sort of solution. I'm not quite sure everyone else buys into it. That's where we are right now.
It is interesting too, isn't this is happening on the DP World Tour at St. Andrews, because the DP World Tour by and large has been the forgotten piece of what a potential deal would look like. They're never mentioned. Guy Kenings is never mentioned as sort of in the room or making any headway on a deal. If you're the DP World Tour, aren't you sitting pretty at this point, Rex? Because if the PGA Tour and the PIF cannot come to a deal, all of a sudden the DP World Tour and LIV and the PIF, that relationship could then be consummated in a way that sort of picks up the European Tour. And all of a sudden, 30 years ago, that was a very strong competitor to the PGA Tour. Do you foresee a scenario in which, if that deal falls apart, that the DP World Tour could then unravel its strategic alliance, partner with the PIF, and you have sort of two competing strong tours that way, and all of a sudden the European Tour becomes sort of the worldwide circuit that is now infused with Saudi cash?
To unravel that alliance, essentially the European Tour would have to buy back, quote unquote, the shares that the PGA Tour has now invested in, earned, bought from the DP World Tour, if that makes sense. The PGA Tour has made a huge investment into the DP World Tour to become that strategic partner. And so to get that back, Jay Monahan has a seat on the board. Like, this is, there is no ambiguity here. Jay Monahan and the PGA Tour have a say in what the DP World Tour does going forward. I'm not saying that's impossible, but I think it would be very, very difficult for the DP World Tour to decide, okay, this isn't working out with the PGA Tour. We're going to break off and go in a different direction, because Jay Monahan and the PGA Tour would have a say in that. And I think the perfect example of that is a story that Bob Herrick from ESPN just broke, I think, a week or two ago, where LIV Golf and the Public Investment Fund reached out to essentially the DP World Tour and wanted to come up with some sort of deal that, all right, let's stop the fines. Let's stop all of the legal issues that are coming along with players on LIV wanting to go back and play the European Tour. And there were agreements that were going to be in place. The DP World Tour were going to get some starts on the Asian Tour series that essentially LIV Golf runs. They were going to get a sizable, I was told it was $6 million investment in cash. And they were going to come to some sort of agreement that all of the LIV players could go and play DP World Tour events if they had status. And that was nixed. The DP World Tour said no. I think you'd be fooling yourself if it was the DP World Tour that actually said no. It was Jay Monahan who said no.
Certainly sticky. You and I have had plenty of pints in the Dunvegan and tried to figure out the golf world. Who knows? Maybe Yasser, Jay Monahan, Guy Kenings can all have a couple pops of the Dunvegan and figure this thing out once for all. 2 years seems too long. It does at least seem progress, at least outwardly, that these guys are playing together and potentially that meeting this week to form the future of the PGA Tour. Apologies in advance for any Wi-Fi or buffering issues we have had with the audio during this Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lab, but certainly wanted to do it here at Tim Aquana and the Constellation Furyk and Friends Pro-Am. Thanks so much for them for getting us out. Had a great day. Look forward to doing it again next time. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lab. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll be back in a couple days for a recap of the Dunhill Links, anything else that happens at the PGA Tour.